I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Before the jury filed into the courtroom today to hear testimony in the case of the people of the state of New York versus Donald J. Trump, Judge Juan Merchan issued his ruling to the lawyers of what would actually happen to Donald Trump if he were to testify in his own defense in this trial. Now, of course, before the judge issued his ruling about what evidence the prosecution would be allowed to use to attack Donald Trump's credibility as a witness, there was absolutely no reason to believe Donald Trump was going to actually testify in his own defense. Donald Trump is incapable of telling the truth, and that would become quickly obvious to the jury, who would probably find themselves watching Donald Trump commit perjury and probably concluding that they were watching him committing perjury. So there really was no chance that Donald Trump was going to testify.
Listen, when I do this program, I try to give you balance. I try to give you sound bites. I try to give you material you probably didn't hear or watch, because you want to get into the mud with all the people I have to deal with to build this program with you. That's Lawrence O'Donnell, MSNBC, and postulating that if Trump were to testify, he'd be incapable of testifying anyway, and he'd be lying, and the jury would see he was lying, and he'd be caught on perjury. That is all pure fabrication created in the, I don't know if you'd call it the mind of Lawrence O'Donnell, but whatever he's got working in there, gray matter of some type. This trial is more than a circus. I mean, I've seen goat ropings, I've seen train wrecks, I've seen the bearded lady at the circus, and I've never seen anything like what's going on here. And here's something else to keep in mind. This trial basically was taking, basically the hush money, as they're calling it, that was paid to Stormy Daniels before the 2016 election. That was a misdemeanor, if anything. And its statute of limitations would have run out, but they decided to refabricate it now because of the election and try to put Trump back on trial, claiming that he was listing it as business expenses. I want to share something with you. Some of you probably know this. Maybe some of you are guilty of it. I'm not calling anyone out. But there have been many businessmen and women who on various occasions have put things under entertainment expenses when it involved male or female prostitutes, drugs, things of that nature. It all goes down as an expense. And unless you take a fine-tooth comb to it, you may not find out exactly what it is. They're doing it with Donald Trump because he's running for president. If he had not been running this year, they never would have brought this case. They're tying up money of the New York City and the prosecutors and everything else. And, of course, Trump trying to force him into more difficult legal maneuvers and keeping him off the campaign trail. That is all this is about. That's the key point, to keep him off the campaign trail. And he's getting so much free publicity now. But he is not going to get a fair jury out of New York. We already knew that. They've got the jury seated. They've got the alternates. The judge made it clear, alternates, you need to pay as much attention as the regular jurors do, because if we have to put you in place of one of them for some reason, you need to be up to speed. You can't suddenly say, oh, I've been reading a book, I wasn't paying attention. No, you need to be paying attention. And I'm sure everyone in the courtroom is, although sometimes there are long, 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 boring sessions. But let me point this out. Again, the lawyers for Trump tried to get a change of venue numerous times. Take it out of New York City directly. Take it into Long Island, someplace like that. New York City, Trump carried maybe 18% of New York City. That tells you right there, out of a city of 8-plus million, there are not a lot of Trump supporters. Oh, they may claim, yeah, I don't like him, but I can be unbiased and I can watch the facts. Now, there's a case for perjury, but trying to prove that, that's going to be something different. All right, glad to have you on board with us again. Let me set the stage for you. This is the first of 2 hours of Larry Connors USA. We're here every Monday through Friday for you from 6 to 8 p.m. When we're on the air, we are streaming video. You can watch the program. Glad to have you watching. And in fact, you can watch at any point, time that works for you, because if you can't catch the entire program now, I fully understand. But everything goes up as a podcast later. So if you miss anything, you can also go to LarryConnorsUSA.com or LarryConnorsUSA Facebook or News Talk STL, Rumble, Twitter, Facebook, and LarryConnorsUSA Rumble, Twitter, Facebook, Facebook, not YouTube. We're on as the program is airing on the radio, so you can watch live. But again, you've got an opportunity to go to the podcast if you miss it. Let me take a note to point out here that this Thursday evening, I'm going to be speaking and taking questions at the GOP headquarters in Fenton, 749 Gravois Bluff. Again, I will start about 6 o'clock. I'll get there when I can, and I encourage you, if you want to join us, it's at the GOP headquarters in Fenton, starting at 6 o'clock this coming Thursday. I'll be there to make a few statements, take questions, and I'm sure some might revolve around this trial. Speaking of this trial again, the Supreme Court justice overseeing some of this, watching all of it, and the gag order that Trump has been given, is considering that maybe Trump could be jailed for up to 30 days because he avoided or rather violated the gag order. Trump had said back in April that it'd be a great honor to become a modern-day Nelson Mandela for speaking the truth about the judge of the Supreme Court justice in New York. So that's still weighing in a balance. But back to the actual trial underway. Rachel Maddow. Let's stay with those on the far left and their impression of what's happening. And here is her own personal account of what she saw and witnessed yesterday in the opening.
I was at the courthouse today in Manhattan. I was in the courtroom for opening statements for this first criminal trial of the former president. I can report firsthand that the courtroom smells like old soup and stale breath. I can report that the police officers who police the courtroom are working very hard and they appear to be very stressed. I can report that Judge Merchan is soft-spoken and has what I think would be universally considered to be a pleasant voice. It seemed to me, in my subjective take, that he seemed miserable to be there. But, you know, I look a lot older than I used to look as well. And I think anybody's got a right to look miserable when they're sitting in a courtroom charged with dozens of felonies as a criminal defendant.
And her last comments regarding, of course, Donald Trump. He looked miserable, but she conceded anybody would probably look miserable if they're sitting in the courtroom facing that. And he's also PO'd because he's got to be there because of this stupid trial. Again, it's being held in Manhattan. They would not let it transfer even outside Manhattan, outside Alvin Bragg, because Bragg is the one who wants to nail him to the wall here. Once again, Maddow then talked about how the prosecutor began to set up some of the case that they say is the essence.
Here's the kicker. Matthew Colangelo, prosecutor, quote, Cohen and Weisselberg then met with Trump, who approved the repayment amount of $420,000 on the $130,000 Stormy Daniels payment and a few other expenses. Now, you will see evidence at trial that Trump was a very frugal businessman. He believed in pinching pennies. He believed in watching every dollar. He believed in negotiating every bill. It's all over all of the books he has written. He ran the Trump Organization with total control. You will hear testimony about his relentless focus on the bottom line. But when it came time to pay Michael Cohen back for the catch and kill deal, you will see that he didn't negotiate the price down. He doubled it. And he doubled it so they could disguise it as income. And you will hear evidence that the Trump Organization was not in the practice of paying people twice what they owed for anything. This might be the only only time that ever happened. And Trump's willingness to do so here shows just how important it was to him to hide the true nature of Cohen's illegal payment to Ms. Daniels and the overall election conspiracy.
You know how you that tie that
launched in August 2015.
Rachel Maddow, you know how you tie all that together? You just begin to fabricate again. He's never paid more than a dime than he ever would or would or could, and this time he did. He had to be guilty simply because he was doing that. Give me a break. That's not judicial process. That is a kangaroo court, which is exactly what Trump has also called it. Now, to his defense, one of his attorneys is raising some points, and it's outside in the hallway, a little hard to hear in the beginning, but I'll help you out when we finish it up.
He should not have two teams of lawyers here today. He should not even be here today because he did nothing wrong. It is the epitome of a witch hunt. I just left where a judge asked us whether our cash bond, sitting in. Ms. James wanted to argue and say that our cash somehow isn't green enough. We wasted time. The judge made a comment saying he thought that money market accounts could go down under the amount. He doesn't even understand basic principles of finance. But this was the man that decided that we owed money and my client committed fraud. We are going to attack every single one. 1 hour, the attorney general and that judge realized quickly that they had no idea what they were talking about. We came to an agreement that everything would be the same. We would modify terms, and that was it. This is where your taxpayer dollars are going, America. Right here. Witch hunt after witch hunt.
There you have it. She's saying all of this has been trash. The judge has no understanding of economics, the numbers we put in front of him. And let's pick it up again as she started saying and driving home. This is nothing more than a witch hunt.
Witch hunt after witch hunt. President Trump's company was worth more in that case than it is now. And now what? We're here because of something that happened when he was in the White House that wasn't even wrong. It was not wrong. You hire lawyers to solve problems, lawyers solve those problems, you pay them. That's it. This is a joke. It's an affront to the American Constitution. It's an affront to our judicial system. And it's an affront to every lawyer that cares about their license, that cares about what is right and wrong. I am sick of coming in front of the press and saying this, but you have to because you people need to understand what is going on. God forbid you put an accounting thing in for legal counsel. It's legal counsel. And now our taxpayer dollars, my time, our attorney's fees, are all here because they're afraid of 2024. And you know what? They should be because the American people are not stupid. They see what's going on. Thank you.
The people do see what's going on. As she said, we're spending all this time here, all this money, on a witch hunt, a kangaroo court, a bunch of trash, things that don't really make sense, but it makes sense to those who are trying to persecute Donald Trump, not prosecute, persecute. In another arena, the House of Congress. Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is escalating her threat to remove Speaker Mike Johnson as House Speaker. Now, those closest to the story say that it's going to be an uphill climb, but something that Congressman Massey of Kentucky, Republican, shared might have made that climb a little easier.
People don't understand this back home, I think, where Speaker Johnson is. These are not just bipartisan bills. This is a bipartisan speakership. He's
yes.
allowed sharing power in the Rules Committee and on procedures.
So just 30 seconds remaining. He surrendered the speakership. We now have a power sharing agreement. Is it fair to say Republicans don't control the House really anymore?
That is correct. Mike Johnson can't control the House. It's a uniparty. He's the uniparty speaker. And you saw them celebrating with those flags. It's against House rules to wave flags like that. But they celebrated because they got everything they wanted. Every Democrat voted for that Ukraine spending, and a majority of Republicans voted against it. Yeah, there they are waving the flags. I sat there. I took video from a different angle, but I recognized that video. I'm still stinging from being surrounded by people yes. waving those flags.
Ukrainian flags at the House of Congress. Now, he was being interviewed by Charlie Kirk. I have some differences and issues with Kirk from time to time, but in this case, he was doing a pretty good job of questioning Massey, but he's also letting his position get in front of it. But some of this also involved the push for the FISA warrants to be renewed. Remember that? For that, for to be fully briefed by the intel agencies, they had to go in a skiff. That's a specially contained room where nothing information-wise can get out. You can't bring in different materials because you just have to sit there and listen. Can't take notes, can't do anything. And it's inside the skiff that they were trying to sell the idea that, yes, we need to give the FBI and all the intel agencies additional powers.
What happened? What would cause somebody to flip from fighting hard in a committee to all of a sudden having the deciding vote as speaker? Was he an imposter all along?
I'm coming to that conclusion. I don't think his family's locked up in the basement somewhere, you know, being tortured. Those claims are ridiculous. I don't even believe that he went in a skiff and learned something that we don't know, because I spent 3.5 hours in the skiff with Mike Johnson. Remember, I'm on the Judiciary Committee. And I got the same briefing he got from CIA, NSA, DOD, FBI, DNI, FISA judge. They were all in that skiff. It was actually a 4-hour meeting. After 3.5 hours, I said, this is enough. This is a waste of time. You haven't given us one example of where spying on Americans without a warrant was able to help you avert terrorism. They gave us hypotheticals, and then they gave us examples of how spying on foreigners overseas without a warrant was helpful, but they never gave us an example. So you can't, don't believe his story that he went to the skiff and he learned something. That's not true.
Not true, he says. And again, that's Thomas Massey referring to the fact that in the skiff, while they're trying to tell you, we need to have this additional power and continue because we're actually stopping terrorism. Now, listen, after 9/11, we were all saying, do whatever we need to do. I had a conversation like that with someone. He said, I want them to do what they need to, but I don't want them abusing their power. And that's the concern. That's what we've seen happen with Trump. And they lied to the FISA court. And again, back to Charlie Kirk, he's saying, listen, Reverend Speaker Johnson, I tried to reach out to him, ask what's going on, and here's my response I got from him.
You were in the same skiff as Speaker Johnson, because I got really fired up at Speaker Johnson on this vote, and I called him and I texted him, and he was arguing from authority with me, Congressman, saying, Charlie, if you were in the skiff like I was, you would understand. And I literally have this in writing. You think innocent Americans will die if we require the FBI to get a warrant? Question mark. I do. So how did,
yeah, well,
what did he hear that you didn't hear in this song and dance 4-hour struggle session in the skiff?
It was a struggle session. It was like a brainwashing session. And here's the thing, Charlie. When you go into a skiff, remember, most congressmen are used to having two things with them that allow them to verify something if they're being told a lie. Number one, they usually have their smartphone with them.
And their staff.
And their staff. Exactly. Those two things you are deprived of. So if you are deprived of those two things and any connection to anybody for 3 or 4 hours, you kind of start believing what they're saying. And you think, well, maybe they'll let me out of this skiff if I just nod my head and succumb to the pressure.
Very interesting points of view considering renewing the Patriot Act's authority and FISA warrants. Next hour, I have a guest discussing the leftist Jew haters at our poison Ivy League universities. Before this hour is over, the story of a grade schooler and a frightening thing happening in the class. But my guest coming up next, almost 30 years with the CIA and DNI, regarding Israel's response to Iran. Lock and load, ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Pigeons, they are everywhere, and they're very good at dive bombing freshly washed cars. Wellington Environmental reminds you, those droppings are more than a nuisance. They can be a major health issue, especially massive droppings on buildings or in parking garages. So who do you call to safely clean it up? You do what many hospitals, universities, public buildings already do. You call Wellington Environmental. Wellington Environmental has been dealing with all kinds of hazards for 35 years. Special people, special skills, special equipment. Wellington gets it done. So to avoid health issues ranging from pigeon droppings to mold to chemical leaks, contact Wellington. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. WellingtonSTL.com. Wellington Environmental. Your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps in the afternoon.
Horace, Americans individually have lost over $4,000 in income and over $7,000 where you have a household with both parents working.
It shouldn't be, it's the economy, stupid. We should just say, stupid! It's the economy. Unbelievable the devastation that Americans are feeling.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps, weekdays at 3:30 on News Talk STL.
Are you thinking about buying medicine online? A search for online pharmacies yields more than 20 million results. But which ones can you trust? Medicines bought from unlicensed online pharmacies can be dangerous. You may get a fake drug, your condition may get worse, or you may experience a bad reaction. Don't put your health at risk. To learn how to find an online pharmacy that's safe and legal, visit fda.gov/besaferx. A message from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
Great news for my sponsor, Napoli C. And it's no surprise to me nor hundreds who have dined there. The first time I entered, it was clear Napoli C is unique. The decor, the fish, imaginative cocktails. And, of course, Napoli C is right next door to Napoli 3 in St. Charles. Napoli 2 is in Town and Country. The original Cafe Napoli is in Clayton. And I'm honored to endorse each of them. Visit any of the Cafe Napolis.
This is News Talk STL.
I said, brother, if you only knew, you'd wish that you were in my shoes. You just keep on using me until you use me up.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back, my guest. We've had on numerous times before because he's an expert on Iran and what's happening there and what we should or should not be doing with Iran and where we're failing. And we are making a lot of failing mistakes all along the way. Fred Flights, vice chair of the America First Policy Institute, Center for America Security. And Fred, the last time we talked was before Israel hit Iran, before Iran was attacked by Israel. We were asking then, after Iran hit Israel, what do you think they should do? And you said they should go ahead and hit Iranian targets, but you did not think they would launch any attacks directly into Iran. They ended up doing that. What's your perspective now?
I think it was a brilliant response. It was carefully calibrated. It was limited. It went to a facility near Esfahan, which is Iran's main nuclear research facility. 2,000 nuclear scientists work there. Apparently an airbase near there was attacked. My understanding is that the Israelis used an advanced supersonic missile that can evade advanced radar, meaning the S-400, a radar system that the Iranians got from the Russians. And I think the Israelis made the point to the Iranians that you can't stop our missiles, and if you hit us again, we will do devastating damage to your country, probably taking out your nuclear program, maybe taking out your oil industry.
And that compares to how Iran was not able to hit Israel as it intended. They claimed they did, but for the most part, the Iron Dome worked, and anything that got hit was mostly debris coming from what was shot down. Now, there's a piece in the New York Times yesterday that Israel did plan a bigger attack on Iran, but scaled it back to avoid widening the war.
Yeah, I've seen reports like that. I'm not sure that they're true. The Biden administration engages in a lot of spin to give itself credit for things it had nothing to do with. I think
no,
the Israelis.
I'm sorry. Excuse my laughter. No surprise there. Go ahead.
Because there was another Wall Street Journal article about how Biden avoided a regional war. He did nothing of the kind. He made the situation worse. The Israelis know what they have to do. And look, I was on one program, and the panelists asked me, well, why didn't Israel destroy Iran's oil industry? Well, I mean, that was unnecessary. It would cause enormous environmental damage, probably causing fires. It would burn for months. It needed to deliver a carefully calibrated message And I think we know very well that the Biden administration didn't want Israel to attack. So let's not say they had much to do with how Israel responded.
There's also a report that the Iranian-Israeli strike coincided as they were cracking down on dissidents at home. I mean, they already knew they had problems in their own land, and I don't know, were they attacking Israel and cracking down on dissidents who did not want any attack or didn't want something or wanted more to take place? What's the take on that?
I think it was for domestic consumption to some extent. The Iranians had their own reasons for launching this attack to look tough. And it was, I mean, some experts are saying this attack showed the superiority of Israel's air defense. There's a lot of truth to that. And it showed how bad Iran's missile system is. But I'll tell you that Iran fired some advanced missiles with a very good record of in testing. Five of them got through. Four of them hit an Israeli air base. And if they had chemical weapons on them, it could have been devastating. Right. So this was a serious attack. This wasn't a pretend attack. It wasn't just a symbol. 300 projectiles were fired at Israel. Israel had to respond.
And they only need one or two, like you say, to get through that has a something like that on board. Does Iran – I know their public posture is we succeeded. Did they really?
I think they probably did not succeed, that they thought that their attack would be more successful than it was. But I also believe that some of these advanced missiles, I think they were fired at targets that would do significant damage, but not kill large numbers of civilians. I just don't know. But of these four advanced missiles that hit this airbase, if they had hit an Israeli city, a lot of people would have been killed. So was that accidental? Was it planned? We just don't know.
Now, the House, as you well know, the other day did approve an aid package that included money for Israel and, of course, Ukraine, but Israel. And now we've got word coming from Netanyahu and others saying that they're lashing out basically at potential U.S. sanctions on any military action or unit that they might want to carry out. They welcome the aid. But at the same time, Netanyahu's saying any sanctions by the U.S. against our military will be a morale low.
It's just appalling that we would be sanctioning Israeli soldiers while Israel is at war. Would we do this to any other ally?
Perfect point.
And I think it simply shows how American politics is being turned on its head by these massive demonstrations by far-left lunatics who are attacking Israel and are expressing, you know, rank anti-Semitism. And Joe Biden is trying to appease them because he realizes that they could be the reason he does not get reelected this November. And I mean, if there was a time to stand on principle and say, well, look, maybe I'll lose, but I want to do the right thing, this is the time for Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. But he's not going to do that.
Of course he's not. I'm following a lot of different sources, as I well know you do, and there's one Twitter account that popped up. It's written by a woman, Simone Zimmerman, which sounds Jewish. I don't know if she is or isn't. She said, let's talk about safety on university campuses. Let's talk about how Israel bombed every university in Gaza. Let's talk about, and goes on and on. And I said, I quoted it back, said, let's talk about October 7th. And, of course, that's being ignored. Right now we have everybody that hates Jews or is looking for a reason to unsettle the Israeli leadership, claiming that they're slaughtering innocent people without any determination, just reckless abandon.
Why aren't the protests on these university campuses to have the hostages who were kidnapped by Hamas released?
Right.
No one talks about that.
Nope.
This was genocide. This was the worst act of genocide since the Holocaust. And I told you, I went to the Gaza-Israel border with General Kellogg a couple months ago. We looked at these tiny kibbutzes, pictures of these beautiful young couples who lived in them. The tiny houses were full of hundreds of bullet holes. They were brutally killed and murdered and raped in front of these homes. And after the fighters came across the border, Larry, they were followed by civilians from Gaza who committed their own atrocities and stole everything in sight. This was a massive act of genocide. And how else would Israel respond? Hamas started this war. All the devastation is Hamas's fault.
Fred, I have not heard about these civilians from Gaza also crossing over and carrying out the looting of the area, but it doesn't surprise me. So then some of those obviously in Palestine probably were innocent of anything, and certainly the children, maybe some of the men and women, but they're held by Hamas. They don't have any option. And I did point out to the same author of this Twitter account said, if they had wanted to indiscriminately kill, they could have wiped Gaza off the map October 8th.
Of course they could have, and Israel would never do that. Israel's tried to avoid civilian casualties. This is a difficult area to operate in. When you have terrorists who are hiding within civilian populations that are building bases within and underneath hospitals, it's a very hard environment to operate in. And we know the Israelis have made some mistakes, you know, they've owned up to it. And they said, look, we're sorry. We didn't mean to do this, but it's a difficult operating environment. They're doing their best to protect civilian lives. The people who did that were held accountable. But again, Hamas started this war, and Hamas is still holding hostages, and the media doesn't talk about it.
And I don't see them on the campuses either shouting for peace, just peace, period.
And I mean, we've talked about this before. This anti-Semitism and hatred of Israel on the left, this is not new. This has been there for a long time. It's just expressing itself right now. Before the 2016 election, I might add, AIPAC, the America-Israel Political Action Committee, had a conference in Washington. None of the Democratic candidates would address it. And I just thought at the time I wrote about this, I just thought that was sending a very disturbing message about the support of the Democratic Party for the Jewish people and for the state of Israel.
They're walking into the room, dropping a grenade, and walking back out. I'm looking at additional tweets from this person I was referring to saying, this is why college students are protesting in America. They're watching these massacres. They refuse to be silent. They're rising up to protest not just this, but additional genocide against Israel.
And look, if you use the wrong pronoun around these people, you'd be brought up on charges by the university leadership. And now Jewish students, and you've seen them on the news. They don't want to go back to Columbia. And you've probably seen videos of Jewish students and professors trying to go across campus. They're surrounded by these left-wing anti-Semitic lunatics who won't let them move around. What is the school administrators doing about this? What is the New York police doing about this?
But it's already been embedded, and they've already created it, and now it's on the loose.
I think that's right.
Fred Flights, as always, I thank you very much for your time, sir.
Good to be here.
We'll do it again. Fred Flights, Vice Chair of the America First Policy Institute. Coming up before we wrap up this hour, a horrifying story inside of middle school.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
John Beal knows that right after a hailstorm, new roofing companies start popping up everywhere. But the Small Business Administration reports 96% of them go out of business within the first 5 years. So how good is that warranty? John Beal started in the roofing business helping his granddad and his dad. Always offering the best roof, best price, best guarantee. John Beal Roofing, not some fly-by-the-night operation. Call my friend John. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
News, analysis, opinion.
USA, USA! That's a big game, man!
China hasn't, she's really losing control.
People in China didn't ask me about people mowing each other down in the mall.
This is News Talk STL.
It is their responsibility.
Hate is a metastasizing agent.
We're all keeping a close eye on this.
Illegal immigration is crazy right now.
The United States is not being overrun.
News Talk STL.
It is a crisis at the border without question.
At NewsTalkSTL.com.
This is moving season for many homeowners and businesses. Contact my sponsor, McGuire Moving and Storage. McGuire will come to you, give you a free, honest appraisal. McGuire, fully licensed, insured, local or long distance, with climate-controlled storage. McGuire Moving and Storage has the Larry Connors USA seal of approval. 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuire Moving. com.
This is News Talk STL.
I've been holding out so long. I've been sleeping all alone. Lord, I miss you. I've been hanging on the phone. I've been sleeping all alone. I won't kiss you.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
And Representative Ocasio-Cortez in New York, you know, I learned a long time ago, listen to that lady. Listen to that lady. We're going to talk more about another part of the world, too, real quickly.
That is Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, after walking and talking and holding hands with Congresswoman AOC. Now, let's stop it right there for a second. When was the last time you saw a president walking hand in hand with a fellow member of Congress, especially, and I will give AOC credit for this, a young, beautiful-looking woman, and he's holding her hand, and she's holding, and maybe she was guiding him, serving as his lead to make sure he didn't take a wrong path? Would that have been it? Could have been. I don't know who initiated the hand-holding, but it was just, I'm going to use this word. I don't know if you agree with it, but it was bizarre. Absolutely bizarre to watch the president walking hand-in-hand with AOC. Wonder what Jill Biden thought about it. That could be an entirely different argument. A different discussion on another day, maybe. Maybe tonight at the White House. But what they were talking about, really, I could care less about, because between the two of them, there's not anything of common sense that's going to come out. But he was also making the point. I talk a lot. I'm going to learn a lot from this lady. I can learn a lot. No, I don't think you will, but if you want to continue listening to her, well, then you're just going to get more progressive nonsense in your ear on a regular basis. And that is what we've got going on right now with this administration. They are controlled by those on the left. We all know it. It's not a secret. I mean, if it comes to anything that is woke involved, they're at the heart of it. They're the ones pushing it. They are the ones that are making it very clear that what we need to have happen in this nation right now is more wokeness. And as you were hearing my guest just point out, Fred Flight, saying these Yale students are all concerned about genocide, and so are their professors that are encouraging and have been basically fomenting this Jew hatred for decades. My guest in the next hour is going to address that in more detail. But they've been building all of this up, and now they're using it as an example. This is exactly what Hamas had in mind when you get down to it. Only they wanted it even stronger. They actually believed that if they went into Israel and carried out such a daring act of terror, and it certainly was, and even take hostages, that the other Muslim nations would rise up with them, that wanted to overtake and throw out Israel, destroy it, and America. The other Muslim nations, some of them, the terrorist organizations, added their part. You've got the Houthis doing what they can from Yemen, and of course you've got Hezbollah up in Lebanon doing some of that, but the other nations didn't. And when it comes to these students in the streets at the universities and elsewhere shouting, you know, that Israel needs to be destroyed, is creating genocide, and we care about the Palestinian people in Gaza, why are they not raising protest in other Arab countries that are also Muslim and saying, why aren't you taking some of these refugees? You know why? Because they don't have freedom of speech in those nations. They would not be allowed to carry out this kind of activity without loss of life, limb, property, whatever else they might have. But that's a point. Throughout the Middle East, not one other Arab country wants the Palestinians and the refugees in their country. Egypt is right there, adjacent to Gaza. They will not open the gate for Palestinians to escape Gaza and come into Egypt. Partly because they fear that, and rightly so, among the, quote, refugees would also be terrorists who would then set up base inside their country and use that as an operation point, which in turn means maybe their country would be targeted by Israel or other strikes. This is not complex when you break it down to the simple thing of hating someone because of their religion. And it's ingrained. It's taught. It is all the way back through the Bible. Again, and I've done this before, but it's worth repeating. Golda Meir, first Prime Minister of Israel, stated, we will have peace when our enemies love their children more than they hate us. We're not there. We're not there, and more children, and some of them involved in all of this, are dying. On the economic front, there was a new study out, and this is as reported by Fox News. As you listen to it, I'm going to tell you about some of the latest concerns about inflation. Stand by, please.
The Trump campaign, they are blasting President Biden's recent budget proposal. Like you said, they're claiming it's going to result in the largest tax hike ever. And they said this, it would, quote, take nearly $40,000 away from the average American family who is already losing thousands every year due to Biden's record high inflation crisis. Now, for context, Biden's proposal takes aim at the wealthy and corporations. It calls for a minimum 25% tax hike for households making over $100 million. It raises the corporate tax rate from 21% to 28%. But if you think about it, that could have a trickle down effect. So there was a recent study by the Tax Foundation. It predicts this could result in a 2.2% drop in economic output. Wages could be slashed by 1.6%, and close to 800,000 full-time jobs would go away.
So in other words, the jobs would disappear under the Biden plans to make things supposedly better. He was just yesterday touting about, hey, there are going to be a lot of jobs. You can get money by working to create a cleaner climate and so forth. Yeah, that's right. You can get a job. There'll be something like 2,000 jobs if you want to make money like that. Al Gore already knows that. You can make money by claiming climate change is a threat to the nation and the world. But the tax hike he's proposing would be the largest tax increase in U.S. history. And it could actually mean a 2.2% drop in economic output. Now, to that extent, again, when you're looking for some proof of where we're going to be going with some of this stuff and how it's going to end up hurting us, I'll remind you that the Trump taxes as put in place will end in 25. They will come to an end at that point. Of course, we'll see the ruling party as to what they do. So if it's the Democrats in control, do you think you're going to be getting some tax cuts at that point that's going to work for you? I would not be counting on that. And then I've seen other reports indicating from one source that You think inflation would be cooled if the interest rates are going up, but it's actually accelerating inflation because it is costing more. And the Fed has indicated they were really going to consider cutting the rate again. I don't know if they will or not before it's over with. I do know this. Americans are in worse shape than what this administration wants to admit. And that means regardless of your political stripes, your ethnicity, your religion, your color, your basic beliefs, it's your income. And for those who are already barely getting by, it's not getting better under this administration. And if they have their way, it's going to get tougher. But they won't be hurt by it. They are buffered from it. They live in their big, fancy, multi-million-dollar homes. And I could be jealous of them, but I mean, if they earned it rightfully, I don't care. It's like a pro sports star. If they get $5 million every 6 months, and the contract is willing to pay them that, and they talk to their agent, they made it work, well, then so be it. Good for them. But that's not common for the American citizen, is it? Coming up, you already know about the violence in our classrooms. We see reports repeatedly. If you think it's bad, you're going to know, you will know it's bad when you hear the story of a 13-year-old describing what happened in her class.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want to give someone something which they will really enjoy? Give them a Cafe Napoli gift card. You pick the amount, and they pick which of the Cafe Napolis they want to visit. Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Cafe Napoli in Town and Country, Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles, or right next door, Napoli C. The Napoli gift card. It's the perfect gift for anyone, or your entire office. Cafe Napoli. Cafe Napoli.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
There was blood going everywhere. I was the table right behind. And all you see is blood everywhere. And it was just... And then you say in your email that it was 8 minutes. But we timed it. It was 28 minutes. And we had to sit in there and watch them clean up her blood off those tables and ground. And we had to watch them take her out with blood dripping down her face. And I will never forget that. And laying in bed last night, I just kept repeating it in my head. And we shouldn't have had to sit there and just watch them clean up her blood with the mop. Watch her repeatedly yelling that I'm going to murder you and just hitting her with a Stanley. Oh, and God. I don't get how, you couldn't have stopped it. It was 5 hours from when I told you it was going to happen and when it happened. It was 5 whole hours. I don't get how you couldn't have stopped that. And how Ms. Vittori said, don't worry, it's not going to happen. We have her under control. But clearly you didn't.
Did not have it because even though they had been warned that something like this might happen, the administrators did not step into it, did not try to put a stop to it, did not take actions in advance of it. And as a result, you had a student beaten, basically, beaten in front of other students. How old were your children? What do you think would have been the result in their mind if they had watched that take place? This took place in a middle school in Pennsylvania. The teenager involved has been charged, but where it's going to go is still unclear at this point. I'm looking at some of the quotes that have come out since that time. This was the Upper Gwynedd Township, North Wales, Pennsylvania. It's the North Penn School District board meeting where they were talking about it after it happened. Now, this happened last week, but some of this stuff is still just coming out. But a seventh grade student assaulted by another and shouting to that student, I'm going to murder you. I'm going to kill you. The injured student had to go to the hospital, but is now home and recovering. But again, these kids who watched this and witnessed it. He said they're not going to forget it, obviously. And one of the students admits that the student who got attacked didn't see it because she was facing the other way. And all of a sudden, you just hear these loud bangs of this Stanley Trophy cup bouncing off her head at lunch. The students also claimed there was a hit list, and they had warned the counselors and teachers the morning of the attack. That's what this student was saying. You could have stopped it. It's 5 hours from when I told you it could happen, and you did nothing. But by God, if you'd called somebody by the wrong pronoun, that student would have been hauled up on charges, maybe dismissed from class forever from that school. I'm looking at comments from the board meeting, and one of those speaking was a parent and also had been a member of the board and had been serving as an educator in the past as well, the superintendent. And the superintendent acknowledged, this should not have happened, period. As an educator, as your superintendent, as a father, I'm appalled by what happened, and well, you should be. And he said, now we're pursuing details leading up to it. While you're at it, make sure you inquire why the hell no one responded when kids were saying there's a hit list out and some kids are going to be hurt. Why did you not do something 5 hours earlier? The only blessings here is that the child is going to be okay and is not going to be suffering any permanent damage physically, but that child and the others who witnessed it are physically, mentally, emotionally affected forever. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.